Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Time now for our weekly visit, our chat with the one and only Joel Klatt, former host right in that chair that Mark is sitting in, but now superstar college football analyst for Fox, presented by Audi Flatirons. And with that introduction, we say hello to Joel Klatt. Good morning, Joel.
Very flattering, Mike. Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. Hey, what do you think about this, Joel? Because Mike and I have been having this just roundabout conversation, and I've been trying to convince Mike for 5 weeks now that Joe Flacco is actually playing really good football, and there's not enough people around him. But the whole thought process, if the Broncos are you know, their record is such that they're out of it, there's no playoff chance, and it's the last month of the season, and Flacco is still playing really good football, that you just scrap pile Joe Flacco and you start Drew Lock just because you want to see what Drew Lock is. Where do you fall on that argument?
Well, are you saying like right this week like 2 or 3
like
weeks?
The last 4 weeks of the season.
I could get on board with that, you know, season is lost from a playoff perspective, only in the sense that I believe that quarterback is the only position that you cannot replicate whatsoever in practice. You cannot get live reps at that position. And that's the only way that you're going to actually know, whether the guy is going to turn it on when the lights are brightest or when he's not. I was not a great practice player, you know, partly because I needed the game clock. The play clock. I needed the system. I needed an opposing defense with a strategy. And, you know, when I just sat there and threw 7-on-7 or routes on air or 1-on-1 routes, there were a lot of guys more talented than I was, from a throwing perspective, but I was a better operator of the system than those guys. And so I think that you need to understand and maybe see at that point. But again, this is down the road. And the only caveat being, and I know I'm hemming and hawing here, the only caveat being, if Joe has played well enough where he is your future, and you're not thinking to yourself, well, what are we going to do at quarterback? And you're thinking, well, no, we have a quarterback. Then Joe plays those last few games. If you think like, well, Joe was a stopgap and we still need to figure out this position, then you play Drew.
All right, so that's fair. So we both win.
Yeah, but I think he sided with me more.
No, I don't think so because they signed him to they redid his contract and put money. I think he's the future for the next 3-4 years. That's me. All right, we move on. Go ahead, ask your old question.
Ask another question. All right, a tie. Okay.
A tie.
All right,
we're taking a tie.
It's a tie.
We'll talk about a tie. Unbelievable. Well, all right, but following along with this, then when it comes to how much of a sample size do you need to determine whether or not this could be the guy? If we're saying the Broncos,
all right, or Drew?
Drew. Let's say the Broncos need to get fill in the blank X amount of games to fully be able to determine whether or not Locke could be the guy, or if they once again have to be in the market for a quarterback next year. How many games?
Well, it depends on, again, I'll go back to this. It depends on how well Flacco has played and what your determination is on Joe Flacco. If your determination is that Drew Lock is not better than Joe Flacco and he can't play in front of Joe Flacco, then it doesn't matter. Then you're moving on because that's the competition, right? I mean, you still got to play or figure out who the best option is in the building. And if he can't beat out Joe Flacco, then that's an issue, and you're going to have to move on at some point anyways. But, you know, I think a determination does need to be made. I think that we spend a lot of time trying to determine, and those quarterbacks out there that are earning their time, they've done it pretty quickly. Think about Russell Wilson, right? Like he came in and beat out Matt Flynn right away. Dak Prescott, it was pretty apparent what was going on. Mahomes, it was very apparent what they had. And they had to basically say, like, listen, we know what we have, but we're not going to play him this year just because that's our stance. It's not because he hasn't earned, you know, the right to be out there. I think that you take a look around the league at some young quarterbacks. Mayfield was, they were chomping at the bit. They had to get him out there, even though he didn't play well last week. Darnold the same way. So if you're sitting there like, well, we've got to find out, then that might be your answer in the first place, if you know what I mean.
Let me ask you this, and I think that's fair, but let me ask you this about Patrick Mahomes. How has he ruined the evaluation process for quarterbacks because he is such a unicorn out there? Like, I think all these young quarterbacks and everybody's fan bases are looking at the Mitchell Trubisky's or the, you know, put the, you know, Baker Mayfield or, you know, Josh Allen or Rosen or whoever the case may be, Sam Darnold, and they're all looking at the progression that Patrick Mahomes has made. And they're like, well, why isn't our quarterback doing that? What Patrick Mahomes is doing is like otherworldly to me. It's unicornish, right?
I totally agree. I think we suffer from this all over the place. You know, every single college fan base, you know, wants their quarterback to do what Kyler Murray did and what Baker Mayfield did and what Jalen Hurts is doing and what Tua is doing. And I think that we have, everybody wants their quarterback to be as efficient as Tom Brady and win at the clip that Tom Brady and Peyton Manning did. Everybody, you know, wants their NBA star to be as great as Michael Jordan and LeBron James. We have been ruined by greatness. We can't even watch golf anymore because if a guy's not winning 25% of his tournaments, we're like, well, he's not Tiger back in his heyday. You know, and I think that there's a strong or large sector of sports fans, not just quarterback evaluation in the NFL, but Mark, I think sports fans that have been completely ruined by the greatness of this generation that we've seen since I've been alive, you know, since the mid 80s, what we've seen in sports has been astounding. And I think that we all get ruined by that. And our bar or our expectation goes so high, that we're ready to throw guys out right away. When if you really look at it, like, let's say Tom Brady comes around right now. Would New England's fan base be all that excited about Tom Brady right now? If you plug him in and it's 2001 and he's just kind of literally, he was a game manager that year. Wouldn't they all be clamoring like, well, you know, but he's not Mahomes. And it's like, well, you know, the last time I checked, Brady beat Mahomes. So there's a lot to that. And I think that in every sport at every level, we have been to some degree ruined by the greatness that we have witnessed in the last 25 years.
What do you think of Baker Mayfield right now? Do you like his bravado, or has he put himself in a position where he is such a target that he's writing checks that his quarterback play can't cash?
Well, he's writing checks that his offensive line play can't cash. Let's be very clear. His offensive line is garbage. I mean, garbage. And while I do like his, I do like a confident guy and I like his bravado, it does put a target on your back. There's no doubt. And to some degree, you know, that has hindered that team. And his off-field antics has increased the level of focus of the competition around them, and they have been unable to match that sense of urgency, in particular from a front seven standpoint, because they can't block anybody up front. And I think that he's going to learn from this, and he's going to probably calm down a little bit. Now, he won't admit it, but I would absolutely assume that he would calm down just a little bit, and in particular because he realizes that it's not just him out there. And this is also, you know, partly when you look at a lot of these college players almost all of them that come from these great programs like Oklahoma or, you know, Alabama, we've seen this countless times with USC quarterbacks, not from the bravado standpoint, but from the standpoint of for a huge portion of these players, this is the first time in their football life that they're playing on a team that is not physically dominant across the board from the opponent. Does that make sense? A lot of these guys in high school played on teams that were beating teams by 40 points, and then they go to a great team because they're a four or five star player and they're beating teams by 30 points. And now for the first time, snap in and snap out, the margin has totally decreased between the players on our side of the football and the players on that side of the football. And I think that that becomes really difficult. And so the confidence level that a guy like Baker has is going to ebb and flow. And he's going to learn that on any given Sunday, you're going to get beat, in particular if your offensive line doesn't play well. I don't know if that answered your question very much, but is there a target? Yes. And will he calm down? Most likely. Do I love bravado? Yeah, I do. I like the guy that can go out there and be confident because the quarterback still has to be the alpha in the room.
Here's what I love. I love an organization that covets the wide receiver, the most dependent position in all of football, so much that they'll get rid of their best offensive lineman, guy by the name of Kevin Zeitler, and send him up to the Giants because you don't need that. I mean, why would you need a control line of scrimmage? That doesn't matter. And I openly root for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns to lose every game. That's just how I feel.
Wow. I tell you what, you, Mark Schlereth, just gave us a peek straight down to the depths of your heart.
I know.
That's right.
It's not good either.
You know what? I kind of love it.
Yeah,
I mean, if you got hate in your heart, let it out.
Let it out. Let it out. Hey, I love your QB on QB analysis. So help us out with this. We saw the Broncos over the last couple of weeks come out and actually look good at the start of games, you know, the scripted plays and all of that. Why is it that a team can get off to that kind of start, build that kind of momentum, that kind of confidence, and then it goes away? And then you see a third quarter against Jacksonville where the offense does nothing and lets the Jags back in the game, and a third quarter the other day in which they had zero first downs in the third quarter. What happens from a quarterback or from an offensive standpoint that what was working at the start that you prepped for, planned for, why can't you continue it? Why can't you build off of it?
I think that's a great question. First, let's start with there are great weekday coaches and there are great weekend coaches, okay? There's guys that can sit in the dark room and put together a script of plays that's going to be really effective. And they can do that with personnel groups. They can do that with formations, and they have a plan, and they know how they want to attack things, and they know what they're trying to do with those script of plays or with that opening number, if you will. And then there are guys that really see it and feel it on game day, and they understand how to get you as a defensive coach to chase plays. Every coordinator, offensively at least, is trying to get the defensive coordinator to chase plays. And as soon as you get him in that rearview mirror and he's chasing you, now you've got him. And so for me, a guy that can start fast and then just totally loses the rhythm is a guy that doesn't see it on game day. He's not a good play caller. And to a larger extent, the staff is not helping him see things, you know, and they're not building on what was effective in that first opening script. I mean, anybody can build a great opening script, but the great storylines, great plays, great movies, they just continue to build on each other. And from a play calling perspective, that sequencing is so important. After the script is done, when I watch a Broncos game, it feels grab bag. And then you'll see, like, the exact same formation and play that you saw in the opening script. It's like, hey, man, this is not college. This is not high school. You can't run the same play out of the exact same formation and think that it's going to be successful unless that play in formation is you physically imposing your will on the opponent. You know, like in 98, 97, the Broncos could line up in certain formations and run the football because they were physically imposing their will on the opponent. The opponent could not stop it. It wasn't a schematic deal. It was a physical deal. Well, in this day and age of football, and the way the Broncos offensive line particularly this year plays, they're not going to impose their will on anybody. So what they're trying to do is gain an advantage throughout the game via personnel groups and via matchups and formations and movement. From my seat, I just think that they've got a poor play caller. That might sound too harsh, but that's the way I see it. You know, because anyone can do an opening script, like I said. But the great ones see it and feel it and get the defensive coordinator start chasing him throughout the day.
Here's what I always say, Joel. It's the difference between calling plays and calling an offense.
And yeah.
They're completely different.
And not even, and I will go a step further, Mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're exactly right, but I'd go calling a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you're calling a game. It's the difference between throwing out whatever is on your big, you know, laminated sheet and again getting to a point where you're giving them the look of run and throwing. And so they're trying to load the box because of your personnel group, and then you're throwing the ball. Now you spread out and they try to chase you over into a pass set and they put a nickel out there. Now you're running the ball because there's an unblocked defender. And now you take the top off of a free access corner, and so he needs help, and the safety moves over, and then you're exploiting the run on that side of the defense because the support player is the corner, and you know you can take advantage of a support player that's a corner. That's getting him to chase you as an offensive coordinator. I just don't see that from Denver.
You know, you made a great point about the idea that the great movies, they don't just have that great start. They continue to be great throughout. It's like when Harry Met Sally, you know, the diner scene was much, much later in the movie.
That's right. That's right. It was kind of like a slow build, not only in that scene, Mike, but also throughout the movie.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
Acting!
Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Joel.
You guys are the best. Have a good one.
All right. Joel Klatt, presented by Audi Flatirons. As we, I know you want to respond to a lot of that. Okay. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. He called out wrinkles. He says Rich Scangarello just isn't getting it done. Do you agree? That's next.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.